We're holding on page 80 in Rav Metzia, the paragraph labeled Daf Kuf Yud Amud Beis, middle of Os Nun Beis. A section in the paragraph deals with the dinim of paying a worker on time. The Torah warns us in a couple of places that there's a mitzvah to pay him on time and not to delay his pay. So there's a section in the paragraph that deals with those dinim. So the Gemara says, turn it up on him. How do we know that a worker you hired to work for you by day is able to collect all night, meaning that you have that entire night, during the 12 hours after you finished work, to pay him? And if you don't pay him by sunrise, then you're over. Because the Pesuk says, don't leave overnight the wages of the worker by the hired worker with you until the morning. And vice versa, if you hire a person to work by night, how do we know that you can that he has all day to collect? Because the Pesuk says, on his day, you should pay his wage. So maybe it's the other way around. Maybe the Pesuk about not letting it overnight is talking about when you hired him by night, and the Pesuk about giving it to him by day refers to when you hired him by day. The answer is no. The rule is that the wages are payable only at the end. Only when the person finishes the job is when you have to pay him. So it can't be, for example, that you hired him by day, and during that day itself you have to pay him. As the Gemara explains, the Torah gives the employer a little while because he has to go and finds, and he may not have the money cash on the barrel head right now, so he has to go and be able to get it. He has to sell something or borrow or whatever it is. So therefore the Torah gives him a grace period. In this connection, it's brought that this is why when we talk about Hayom La'asosim L'machal L'kabel Sodom, that today in this world is where we do mitzvahs, and La'asid Lover is where we get the schar. So one point of it is because our schirus extends our whole lifetime, and therefore it's only at the end that the schar is paid. And then the Rebbe develops in the Sicha the idea also that you also have a collective schirus of the entire Jewish people to bring Mashiach, and therefore only when that's done, then we have the ultimate schar of La'asid Lover. Okay, the Gemara continues, Tana Rabbanan, Mimash Mashanem Loisol and Pola Socher Itcha. Once the Pasuk says, do not leave the wages of the hired worker by you overnight, any idea, Sha'ad Boiker, obviously, if you leave it overnight, means you still have it by you in the morning. Or Matam by Ma'ad Boiker, so why does the Pasuk add the words? Ad Boiker, we learn from that, Malama Chaina over El Ad Boiker Rishon. So a person is over only up till the El Ad Boiker Rishon Bilvad, the employer is over only after the first morning. If he delays past that, then he's not over on that Loisase anymore because he's already been over on it. So the Gemara says, Mikan ve'elach mai. Well, what is he over after that? After all, you're not going to say that once he didn't pay it after the first day, then that's it. He can keep on delaying it indefinitely. Omer Rav, over mishum bal tashe. So Rav says he'll be over on that you're not allowed to delay. Omer Rav Yosef, mai kros. So Rav Yosef says, where's a posik where we see that you're not allowed to delay? The posik says, a posik in Mishlei, al toima l'reach ha'leich v'shuv, u'mocher etein, do not tell your fellow yid, go and come back, and I'll give you tomorrow, v'yesh itcha, when you have it, v'yesh itach, when you have it with you. So you have the wages available, you're not allowed to postpone the guy, you're not allowed to push off the guy and tell him, I'll give it to you later. This is a din d'rabbanan. The fact that it's in Sefer Mishlei means basically that Rambam explains it's a takana or it's a gzeira of Shlomo HaMelech not to do that. So in this connection, talking about this matter of that you have to pay him right away, the Gemara says, Tanya, when the Pasuk says, Ve'elav hu noseis nafshoi, the Pasuk says that the worker is lifting up his soul towards it. So in the simple meaning, it means, in other words, he's looking forward to receiving his wages. But we also have to understand, noseis nafshoi, he literally lifts up his soul as in he's risking his life for it. So why would this worker, for example, have gone up a steep ramp, which is dangerous, the nitla ve'ilon, or hanged from a tree to collect the fruit or whatever, or moser asatmi lemisa, and put himself in dangerous situations where he could be killed? Loyal schoroi, wasn't it that you should give him his wages? So ve'ilon who knows his nafsha, he's literally lifting up his soul and risking his life in order to get these wages. The note of Yehuda, by the way, learns from this an interesting point. We see from this, this is a source in Gemara, that a person is allowed to do a dangerous kind of job. You might argue, where does the Torah give a person the right to do a job that could be risky to his life? The answer is from this Gemara over here. On the other hand, the note of Yehuda says, when it's not a matter of parnosa, when it's just, for example, a person is doing it for fun, there may not be such a heter to do things that are dangerous like that. He talks in terms of hunting, for example. Nowadays, you have many times, people go on various kinds of adventures that are not necessarily so inherently safe. How much they're allowed to do that based on the Nerd of Yehuda, it would seem it's a bit questionable to do that. What? Rides in amusement parks, Mela, there you have, 99.9, however many nines are safe. So there, they always have you sign a waiver anyway, but fine. We're talking about things apparently where there's more of a risk than those. Yeah. Okay. So the Gemara continues. Dover Acha, another explanation. The Elav who knows says Nafshe, another meaning when he's lifting up his soul to it, called a Kovash Schar Socher. Whenever a person withholds the wages of a hired worker, Kilo Notel Nafshe Mimenu is as if he's taking his soul from him. So, in what sense is he taking his soul? Rav Huna and Rav Chista, we learned about this in Bava Kamma. Rav Huna and Rav Chista argue when it talks about that a person steals is as if he's taking his soul, whose soul? Chadam anafshesh gazlan, b'chadam anafshesh nigzol. One says it means that the gazlan himself is taking his own soul. Because in other words, Hashem counts, Hashem tells him he becomes chayev nisa for stealing from the other person. V'chadam anafshe shal nigzal, and the other one says it means the soul of the victim that he stole from. Madam anafshe shal gazan, v'cholokidesa perecha gozo machil. We learned in Bava Kamma in some detail about the two different ways of explaining the psukim and whether it's that he's taking the soul of the one he stole from, because this might be his last money, and then he doesn't have anything else, or are we talking about the soul of the thief himself, that Hashem will take away his soul from him as a punishment. Okay. Further on in the Perek, it talks about the dinim of, like this, a person owes money, and he doesn't have what to pay, so we have a concept, the Gemara discusses a concept called Misadrim Abal Choyv, that you would take, when it comes to a shibud, you have a lien on a person's property to pay off a debt. Primarily, that applies to his landed property, his karka. But you have a concept where if a person is unable to pay his debts, then Basin will go and figure out how much assets does he have, including how much metaltalin assets does he have, and leave him a certain bare necessities. He needs certain basic furniture and clothing, whatever, and then they'll take the rest and sell it to pay off the debt. This is called Misadrin Labal Choyv. So the Gemara has a whole discussion whether, in fact, we do that. It's clear the Gemara says that we do that in the case of Erchin. A person vows an erech to the Beis Mikdash. I pledge my erech, or I pledge the erech of Pliny, and he can't afford to pay the amount that it says in the Torah that he has to pay. Then there'll be this misadrin that Hektish will take from him most of what he has to pay it off and leave him only the bare necessities. So the Gemara discusses the question: do we do the same thing for a Baal Choyv? So the Gemara tells, Ashlechei Rabba Baravur, Leliyahu, Dekoi Bevesak Kvoris, Shal Ovi Kechavim. One time, Rabba Baravur met up with Eliyahu Anavi, and Eliyahu was standing in a Goyish cemetery. Why he was standing, now the Gemara is going to discuss soon how he could be standing in there. The Gemara is going to discuss, is Eliyahu a Koyan and doesn't belong in a cemetery? We'll get to that soon. But an interesting question is, why was he there in the first place? Then Yehoyada brings an interesting explanation from a sefer called Medrash Talpius. The reason is because in that cemetery there was buried a Goy who had done some great thing for Jews, and therefore Eliyahu was there to help his neshama out, basically. Anyway, so Omalei, so Rabba Baravu asks Elio, Maushi Sadru B'Val Choyv, what is the din? Do we do this Misadru in the Baal Choyv, or do we say that no, we can only collect from his karka, and we can't do anything to his metaltalin? Mephoshim points out, by the way, now, Elio comes here to earth in two different ways. Sometimes he comes as only a neshama. For example, when we talk about Eliyahu coming to a bris, or Eliyahu coming to a seder, it means it's only his neshama. It can't mean in a guf, because he can't possibly be by all the bris and all the sedarim at the same moment. So then, when he's coming as a neshama, he can be in many different places at once, because he has different mitzvotis of his neshama, but then you also can't ask him halacha, because Torah lo b'shamayim, as we learned earlier in the Masechta. Versus sometimes he comes in a guf, then he's like any other chacham from throughout the generations. He was the leader of the chacham of his times, after all. Then you can perfectly well ask him halacha and get answers, and that's what Rabba Baravur is doing.
special Torah in the basic
Torah. There's nothing, no problem in and of itself discussing Torah and a basic Torah of Goyim. Basic Torah of Jews is a different matter because Lo Yid Lo Rosh, but yeah. So, besides which, also, it doesn't have to be that Rabbi Baravur himself is in the cemetery. He may have seen Eliyahu Yahu there, but he himself is not in there, but yeah. So he asks him, are you allowed to, so what's the deal with Masadra and the Baal Chayiv? So he answers, we do. Goma Micha, Micha Me'erchin, we make Gzeira Shava on the word Micha, which means being poor from Erchin. Gabi Erchin Sidvi Mochu Me'erkecha. By Erchin is the expression in the Pasuk, if he's too poor to pay the Erech, and by a person who owes money, also the Torah uses the expression, if your brother becomes poor. So therefore, the answer is that yes, we apply the same kind of thing in both cases, and we do this Mesadrin, we see how much assets he has, and then go based on that. Okay, the second question, Rabbi Baravu asks him, Minayin la'orim shelo yitrim, how do we know that if a person is undressed, he's not allowed to take truma? Really, it's not so much Tosfos points out that he can't take truma. What he can't do is he can't say the bracha. So the bracha is not ma'akev, but nevertheless, the fact is a person is supposed to say the bracha when he's taking truma. So how do we know that not? So he answers, Dichtiv, because the pasuk says v'leyira v'cha ervas dover, Hashem should not see a matter of indecent matter in you. And from that we learn that when a person is undressed, he's not allowed to say dvarim shebekedusha. So it's not really so much that he can't take the truma, but Tosfos points out the lashon of the Mishnah is that a naked person cannot take truma, and that's why Rabbi Baravu is asking. But the real focus is that he can't because of the bracha, because he can't say the bracha. The third thing he asks is Rabbi Baravu asks him, Lav koyin humar, Rebbe, aren't you a koyin? And the reason why we would say that Eliyahu is a koyin is because Pinchas is Eliyahu. So if he's Pinchas, then he's a koyin. My time, a koyin mar, but that's why he's standing in a cemetery. So Eliyahu answers him, Loi masni mar taris chula, Rabba, haven't you learned Seder taris? And you would know from that there's an opinion of Reb Shimon ben Yochai that says that kvorim of goyim are not matame ba'oil. So therefore, there may be. So if you touch a body of a goy or you carry it, then yes, the person would be tame just like with a yid's body, but it's not matame, too much oil, and therefore I'm perfectly allowed to be in the cemetery. Tosfos discusses so various ins and outs of that. First of all, among other things, Mefoshim discussed the question, was he in fact a Kohen? Now here he's making it sound like he is a Kohen, but nevertheless he's allowed to be there because he's following Rav Shimon ben Yochai's opinion. Tosfos actually discusses what? Nobody's matami when they're alive. Midoraisim. Midrabanan, except the zav and a zava. Midrabanan goyim are considered like zavim and like zavis. But no, we're talking about when they're dead. A dead goyish body is matami when a person touches it or carries it, just like a yid's body. But Reb Shimon ben Yochai holds that gvorim of goyim are not matami ba'oil. Tosfos discusses, it's not printed here in Ein Yaakov, a long discussion about is that in fact the halacha, or is Eliyahu just kind of fobbing him off with an excuse, and the real reason is, and there are really other reasons why he's allowed to be there. In particular, most graves usually have a space of a tefach between the top of the mess and the top of the oron, and therefore that's enough to confine the tumah inside that, and therefore at least on a daraisa level, it's not a problem. Tosfos gets into a whole discussion about that, and the fact is, it remains ader yemazeh, there's a machlokas haposkin, whether the halacha is like Reb Shimon in that regard or not, that kvorim of goyim are not matamin. It's negeya nowadays, as far as koyim, can they walk in areas, or travel in areas, where there are going to be goyisha kvorim? Jewish kvarim is a whole other matter that's more complicated. Even you have questions as far as airline flights and things like that. But yeah, in any case, there's also Tosfos brings up the point: if Eliyahu was a kohen, then how could he revive the bena ishat sofasis? He was dead at the time. And the answer is because Tosfos says because Eliyahu knew for sure that he's going to be able to revive him, therefore he's allowed to. It's a matter of pikuach nefesh. Tosfos also brings up the point that, for example, it's brought in Midrashim that when Rabbi Akiva passed away in jail, then Eliyahu HaNavi came and told one of Rabbi Akiva's Talmudim, Rabbi Yeshua HaGarsi, that we have to go bury him. So again, how could he do that if he's a Kohen? So he gave the answer because the bodies of tzaddikim are not metame. But again, Tosfos says that's not necessarily the correct halacha. The real reason is, Hakosef brings it over here, because it was a mess mitzvah. a mess mitzvah, even a Kohen Gadol becomes Tamei for. So that would be the real reason. In any case, the Hakosev brings over here from a Medrash that, in fact, the Chachamim themselves discussed among themselves which Shevet is Eliyahu from, and at one point it says in the Medrash, Eliyahu himself came and told them that he is from Shevet Binyamin, and he brought them a Pasuk in Divrei Yamin to back that up. But here the Gemara is saying that he was a Kohen, and there's a different opinion in the Medrash that he was from Shevet Gad. So three different opinions what Shevet he was from. In any case, following the possibility that he's a Kohen, so he asked him, why are you in a Beis HaKvaros of Goyim? And he answers, because I'm following the opinion of Reb Shimon that says that they're not Matame, but oil. So he says, haven't you learned Taras? Haven't you learned this point? I once read, by the way, an interesting thing. If you ever go, you visit the old city, you go on the east side of the city, you have over there in the eastern wall of the Hanabias, which at that point is also the eastern wall of the city, there's two gates over there that are nowadays closed up, that are nowadays bricked up with stones. They're called Shari HaRachamim. There's an old Masorah that Eliyahu HaNavi will come through those to announce that Mashiach is here. So the Muslims built a cemetery in that point because they figured that that way, Eliyahu, they knew at least something of Yiddishkeit, and they figured that Eliyahu is not going to be able to come through there. But they didn't learn what it says in the Gemara over here, that it's only Kibre Goyim, and Eliyahu holds it's not a problem. So he'll be able to come through those Shari Rachamim when the time comes, regardless of the whole Goyisha, of the whole Muslim cemetery over there. So Omalei, so Rabba Baravur says, you're asking whether I know Taras Bar Bala Matsina. I'm not even completely familiar with four Sdarim that were focused on in Bavel, which is Moyed, Noshim, Nizikin, and Kodshim. Moyed, Noshim, and Nizikin are all Noyig nowadays. Rashi, by the way, calls Seder Nizikin instead of calling it Nizikin, which is a negative name. Rashi calls it Yeshuas, which is based on a Pasuk in Yeshaya, which the Gemara quotes, the Gemara in Shabbos quotes that Pasuk and Daushins each phrase of it as referring to one of the six Sdarim, and Yeshuas corresponds to Nizikin. Anyway, Moyed, Noshim, and Nizikin are Noyig nowadays, so they focused on those in Bavel. And Kodshim, even though it's not Noyig nowadays, but we know, Kol Oisik v'Toras Oila, anybody who learns the Halachas of Korbanos is considered like he brought a Korban, therefore in Bavel they partitzik in that also. Those are, in fact, the four complete Tzorim that we have Gemara Bavli on. So now, Rabba Baravur says, I'm not even thoroughly familiar with those. B'shita Matzina, you expect me to be familiar with all six Zorim. Zorim is not Noyig in Bavel, in Chutz La'aretz. Taras is also not Noyig so much in Chutz La'aretz, so I'm not really so familiar with them. Tosfos points out that the Mishnayos of those Zorim, of course, Damaroyim were familiar with. What we're really focusing on is he's saying he didn't know the Brises and the Teseftis of those sections. So Marshall also says, you know, listen, Bar Ba can also mean in the fourth Seder. The fourth Seder is Seder Nezikin, which is where Bav Metzia is. This topic of Mesadrin Lebal Choyv is right here in Seder Nezikin. And I had to ask you whether Mesadrin Lebal Choyv. So therefore, so I'm not even thoroughly familiar with the contents of the fourth Seder of Nezikin. How do you expect me to know, and I didn't know this Zeder Shava that you mentioned, how do you expect me to know Seder Taras, which is the sixth one, which is this business of Kibre Ovikachavim? So at least as far as the one with Minayim La'odom Shalom Yitzhar, and Marshall says, fine, he knew the din, he just wanted to know a source for it. I'm not familiar enough with this topic. Omalei v'amai, so the Yo asks him, why are you not familiar enough with it? Omalei, so Rabbi says, d'chikali milsa, because I'm very hard pressed, I'm having a very hard time making a parnasa. Dabrei v'ayle l'ganeden. So Eliyahu then led him. Dabrei is an Aramaic word, means to lead. It means to lead and to convince a person to come. V'ayle l'ganeden, and he brought him into Ganeden. Amalei tells him, pshut glimach, spread out your cloak, sofi shko mahani tarpi, and collect and take some of these leaves that are in Ganeden. Sofa shokol, sure enough, he gathered and started filling up his cloak with them. And he's going to take them with him. Ki have nothing. As he was leaving Gan Eden, Shama de Kamar, he heard a voice, a bas kol, saying, "Man ko ochel alme ki Rabba Baravua." Who is eating up his olam haba like Rabba Baravua? Meaning, in other words, you're taking these leaves, you're thereby reducing the share of your olam haba that you're going to have after 120. Nafat Shadanhu, so he scattered them and threw them out of his cloak. He realized, yeah, I shouldn't take them with me. I don't want to compromise my schar in olam haba. And by the way, this is the Pirush on the Masech, a classic Pirush called Kois HaYeshuas, explains to begin with that, to begin with, Eliyahu didn't mean that he should take the leaves. He meant that you can take them, you can see how fragrant they are and get an idea from that how great your schar is in Olam Haba. You can also, you can use the fragrance to get into your clothing, as in fact is, in fact the Gemara is going to say it went on to do. It's true, Eliyahu did not mean in the first place that he should take the leaves. He mistakenly thought he should, and the Baskel told him don't. Afilo Hochi, nevertheless, Asyaligrime, he brought back his cloak into our world, and it had such a fragrance in it. Sochat Glimarecha, the cloak had absorbed such a powerful fragrance from these leaves. Zabne Betresa Alfi Dinri, so that he was able to sell it for 12,000 dinar, an enormous sum of money just for the fragrance that it had absorbed. He didn't want to keep that money for himself, again, because he didn't want to jeopardize his chelik and Olam Haba, so he gave it to his sons-in-law. In fact, the idea is that Dafka, his sons-in-law, not even to his sons, because his sons at least are going to yarshin him one day. His sons-in-law are not even in a position to yarshin him, so therefore he gave it to them, rather than he himself should not have any hanah from it. So the point is, in other words, we see Eitz Yosef says the message to him was not only the fruit of Gan Eden and not only the leaves that are on the trees, even the leaves that have fallen down, representing like the noblest chokhmah, the withered vestige of the greatness.